You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now let's get on with today's show. Adolescents today have a reputation for being more fragile, less resilient, and more overwhelmed than their parents were when they were growing up. Sometimes they're called spoiled or coddled or helicoptered. But a closer look paints a far more heartbreaking portrait of why young people are suffering. Anxiety and depression in high school kids has been on the rise since 2012 after several years of stability. It's a phenomenon that cuts across all demographics, suburban, urban, and rural. Those who are college-bound and those who aren't. Family financial stress can exacerbate these issues, and studies show that girls are at more risk than boys. In 2015, about 3 million teens ages 12 to 17 had at least one major depressive episode in the past year, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. More than 2 million report experiencing depression that impairs their daily function. And about 30% of girls, totaling 6.3 million teens, have had anxiety disorder, according to the data from the National Institute of Mental Health. My guest today is Jennifer Brosnick. Jennifer is a licensed clinical social worker passionate about supporting families to be resilient. As a mother to three daughters under nine and a survivor of postpartum depression and anxiety, Jennifer knows exactly how challenging motherhood and living with anxiety can be. She also knows that there's hope for all of us with accurate information, support, and inspiration that mothers and families can thrive. Jennifer believes more teens than ever, especially girls, are experiencing symptoms of anxiety. As a society, our goal should not be to get rid of a child's anxiety or the experiences that create fear, but rather instead we should be teaching them how to tolerate all of their feelings and to be more resilient. It's possible to understand how fear operates in the physical, emotional, and spiritual realm, and what actions can help strengthen our inner calm and help children to thrive. Well, welcome, Jennifer. It's so great to have you, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation today because I feel like in society today, girls are experiencing so much anxiety, and it's really such a worry for so many moms out there, and it becomes this cycle where mom becomes anxious because the daughter is anxious, and I would really love to just explore this topic today and really get some great ideas and tips and tricks on how to start managing this and how to start viewing anxiety and processing it with moms and their daughters.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation to come on your show. I think what you're doing is so needed and so fantastic. And this is probably my favorite topic to speak about. So I can't wait to hear your questions.
Awesome. So let's talk about anxiety, right? Because anxiety, there can be good anxiety and there can be bad anxiety. And some anxiety is actually necessary for girls. Can we start there?
Sure. So kind of what I'm seeing is I take a different viewpoint, I think, where it's not that we have more anxiety necessarily, because we've had anxiety since the beginning of man. And that's actually why we're here today, is because we've had this fear response that is triggered when there's an actual thing to be afraid of. When, you know, a car is coming at you. Or I used to teach girls about like body safety. and, you know, staying away from stranger danger, things like that. And the first thing we teach them is the uh-oh feeling. So we need to have that feeling in our gut of that fear of like, uh-oh, like something's not right. So it's important that we remember that we're not trying to get rid of anxiety. We are not trying to, you know, clear ourselves of all fear and worry and stress, because there's actually, you know, science that we know that like a little bit's good for us and it helps us to be productive and good people. And so the way that I look at this, you know, anxiety is that it's not that we have more, it's that we seem to have fewer coping skills, or that we seem to have less resiliency. And I don't necessarily want to get into the whole, you know, how we're parenting and how we, you know, in our generation, I'm almost 40. We used to just go out with our friends and ride our bikes around, and we didn't have parents constantly navigating our lives for us. Like, you know, I got gum thrown in my hair at one point, and there were no adults around. Like, there were probably 15 kids at the park, and we were like in fourth grade. And we just don't do that so much anymore. And so, you know, I think that is a big factor. And also in our, you know, in our time growing up, our parents were in this like self-esteem boosting time. And now we know that that's actually not really good for kids, to boost their self-esteem, to make them feel good for their talents. You know, we now know, thanks to Carol Dweck's research of over 30 years, that, you know, having that mindset of growth and failures are okay. And that it's not about how good we are or our natural abilities, it's how hard we work. And so I think those are some of the factors that are kind of playing into what, you know, what you and I are seeing is this. It's kids are anxious. You know, they have a lot of expectations that they're putting on themselves, that, you know, sometimes their parents are putting on them, or maybe they're, you know, have comparisonitis and they see what so-and-so is doing, or, you know, especially with social media now, things are different. And so it's time for us to kind of, as parents, to get with the times and, you know, and look at things a little differently.
Yeah, there's so many things that you just said that my mind's racing that I want to touch on. But the first thing that you talked about that I really love, and it's something that I'm trying to work on more and more, and I think it's so important, is that uh-oh feeling, that intuition, that I feel that females have it even stronger. And it's not something that we really talk about as much with our girls. And it really ties into this idea of emotional intelligence and language. And something that I work on and something that I like to talk about is creating an emotional vocabulary and helping girls and my daughters, when there's something going on and I can tell that they're in a moment, and I try not to label it for them, and I don't want to say they're anxious or upset or scared, I try to help them find the words on how they're feeling so that they label it, not right. me. So yeah. when they're How going through, my girls are 3 and 8.
3 and 8. So okay.
My 8-year-old even more, because she is more of a highly emotional, highly sensitive individual, and she feeds on others' emotions. So when something's going on, I try to help her with, what are some words that help describe what it is that you're feeling, and helping her to build that vocabulary so that we get to a point where she says, I feel scared or nervous or tired, and I need this because of it. And that's what I'm trying to talk about with them.
It's so important to give them a voice, you know, to invite them to share that. Because a lot of times for a lot of us, you know, emotions weren't really talked about. Like, I don't think I knew what emotions were until college, or like, you know, like as maybe I knew like sad or happy, you know, like there's tons of printables now. Like, there's hundreds of different like variations of our emotional world. And, you know, so the goal is always to help our children to tolerate all of them, because they will be moving. You know, emotions are not this static thing like, oh, I am sad. It's not like, you know, I love the movie Inside Out. You know, it's not like we're those characters. We're like, oh, we're just going to take on sadness or joy. It's so important to teach them to allow, oh, look, you know, you're feeling joyful. Because sometimes like, even like three-year-olds, they may not, they're having the feeling, but they're like, what's this? And I happen, like I study human design, which is a whole nother call. But part of my energy is I have an open emotional center, meaning like I'm very intuitive to other people's emotions. So I can kind of sense, you know, that emotional vibe that I'm getting and give the words if they can't pick them. You know, because I think it's, you know, there is so many that most, you know, adults don't know the full range of all the emotions. So as much as we could say, you know, wow, like, I wonder if you're feeling cranky. Or you could ask them yes or no questions. Are you feeling cranky? Are you feeling happy? Are you feeling tired? You know, there's, you know, all different types of people. So you just have to find out which one connects best with your individual child, because we're all so different.
Yeah. And I love that is part of helping them to learn that vocabulary is asking them, are you feeling this? Are mm-hmm. you feeling that? Because maybe when we hit on that word, then you'll understand. And then we mm-hmm. can move to let's address it this way. Can you talk a little bit about helping to foster that intuitive feeling? What are some good ways to help moms to teach their daughters to listen mm-hmm. to that inner voice and into that gut?
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost is you have to practice it yourself. You have to find some practice that allows you to quiet everything around you. And whether that's the traditional sense of, let's say, meditation practice, which would be, you know, for a specific time of the day, let's say it's 5 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever you can tolerate, that you're just allowing yourself to be, you know, your mind will wander. I promise you, everyone tells me they are a bad meditator. There is no such thing as a bad meditator. None of us are good at it. You know, not that there is no good. That's the thing. It just is what is. And allowing yourself sitting there for those 2 minutes without getting up. And when your mind tells you, oh my God, the laundry is going off, I need to go and do that, by making the choice to sit and to be with your breath, or to be with the emotion that you're feeling, and just that quietness sort of allows us to be more wise about our internal changes, because our bodies are always changing. You know, something we ate feels differently in our body, worked out, so our muscles feel differently. So it's just finding that space for allowing. And when your daughters see you taking this time, you know, and then you are telling them about it. You know, I have three girls, so I'm a clinical social worker. I've been working with families for like over 15 years. And then I had three daughters. So it was like, oh, this is why I got all this experience. Yeah. To figure this stuff out. And, you know, there's no, like, they're all different. They're so different. So mine are almost 9, almost 6, and almost 3. And they're all so different. So what I would do with my almost 9-year-old is, like, we can talk about it more. Like, every night before bed, like, we talk. Like, I go into her room. We have at least 5 to 10 minutes where we just talk about the day and talk about her feelings. And, you know, I check to make sure that she has someone to sit with at lunch and that people are being kind and that, you know, she feels safe. You know, that's sort of what I'm tuning into to know, okay, what do I need to do tomorrow for her? But I don't think there's, like, this holy grail of understanding your intuition. I just think it's becoming aware of what that is. Like, when you have that feeling, like, that's actually your intuition. You know, like, wow. Like, and they have it. Like, my 5-year-old is intuitive. Like, she can, like, look at me and say, like, wow, are you upset? Are you sad? Like, they're generally, it's really us that usually has to work on our intuition. Like, they're kind of still, like, in the spiritual realm in a lot of different ways. You know, they need us to ground them into the earth and to teach us about our intuition.
Yeah. And I love when you said, you know, when your 5-year-old will ask you, you know, are you sad? you know, are you upset? And I think what's really important is that when they ask us those questions and they're acknowledging and they're seeing that, that we don't lie to them, right? Because I think so many moms say they don't, I don't want her to see me upset. I don't want to talk about why I'm upset. But I think it's really important that we say, yes, you're right. Mommy's upset right now. I don't really want to talk about why I'm upset, but thank you for acknowledging that. That I think that's so important for us to say, you're right. Your intuition is correct, but we don't have to necessarily address why with them, right? Instead of hiding.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want to dump all of our adult stuff, baggage onto our, especially our 5-year-olds, you know, because especially if she is intuitive, like that can be a lot for them. But you hit the nail on the head. It is, you know, you're just, again, giving words to that feeling that they just had. Like, actually, I'm a little sad, you know. And you could even say, like, if it's something simple, you know, like, you know, a friend of mine, she, you know, went away, or she, like, she moved away, or, you know, things that, especially with something that's going to happen in their lifetime, you know, that they can kind of relate to. Or, like, you know, a movie that brings tears to your eyes, like any of like the dog movies and the dog die, like that just like wrecks me. And you know, but allowing them, you know, to see some tears, you know. And my 5-year-old, like, she's really good. Like, she's gotten, I mean, she's the one that, you know, makes me work the hardest. But she's also like, she's just gets it. And she'll say now, it's taken a long time, like instead of having a meltdown, like a full on, like on the floor tantrum, tell me I'm getting cranky or I'm cranky. And so, you know, what that means is I'm either hungry, I'm tired, I've been around too many people for too long. And so it's great. It's great that she's becoming aware, you know, that crankiness. And like, and I'll say that too, like, you know, if I'm like shorter tempered, or I haven't filled up my cup as much as I needed to, and I'm getting, you know, my patience is a little wearing thin, she can see that, you know, and she sees it's okay. Like, and I'm always reminding her that I love her. If I ever am addressing her, I'm addressing her behavior. It's never a quality. You know, her behavior is never a personal quality that I'm talking about. So I'm, you know, that's one of my areas that I try to be very conscious of. And she'll do, and it's hysterical because now she'll say that to me. She's like, I don't like your behavior.
Well, that's good. You know, it's that mirroring back. You, so you understand that she's processing it, and you know, the more that they can, you know, even mirror back to us. My girls will say, because you know, when I'm frustrated with them, instead of, I know I'm at a point where I can't even address what's going on, I'll say to them, I'm feeling really frustrated right now, and I'm feeling really upset. I need to take 5 minutes to myself to calm down, and then we're gonna come back, and we're gonna talk about this, right? Mm-hmm. And so they'll do that too, where they're just so frantic over something that they'll say, I need 5 minutes, I need 5 minutes, mama. And then I'll come back and we'll talk. And I'm like, okay,
that's so great.
Totally fine. Right. Yeah. So I say it to them, they're learning it, they're saying it back. Can we talk a little bit about modeling behavior? So when mom, you know, I have been a very anxious person all of my life, and I've learned a lot to not feed into it, especially with children, right? Because they can really push buttons, and they really know how to get us to a point where we are, I feel like a cauldron bubbling, and it's almost like it's going to bubble over. And I've learned to not allow the cauldron to bubble. And I've noticed that the more I've used techniques, whether it's deep breathing, or like I said before, I need 5 minutes, the more they're starting to mirror back that same behavior. Can we talk a little bit about moms that have that anxiety or have that, you know, stress and how it affects girls?
Yeah. So again, just to normalize it, you know, we all have anxiety. And so what we want to look at in terms of, you know, as a clinical social worker, you know, in private practice, what we want to look for, and this is for yourself or your kids, is the severity, is how bad is it? You know, how are you having panic attacks that are limiting your ability to engage in life in the way that you want to. Has it been going on for longer than 2 weeks? And is it something that, you know, just in terms of the symptom level, you know, we just want to, you know, look at all the things that it's impacting. Because sometimes, like, you just need an extra person. Like, you just need, you know, whether it's a coach or a therapist or a friend that can act as that, that understands anxiety, or a good book. You know, there's some great books out there on retraining your brain if you're anxious. And, you know, so it's one is that awareness is I have a problem. You know, there's something that, you know, and once there's awareness of this situation, this challenge, it's such a gift because then you can take action to fix it. And anxiety is one of those things, like, you know, to me, now that we have so much research about the brain and how the brain is neuroplastic and how the brain is constantly changing, that there's not this static space. So whether we're not good at math, we can be good at math. If we're not good at meditation, we can be good at meditation. If we're depressed, we cannot be depressed. And it doesn't mean that we need medication to fix it. Like, we can now take actions to retrain our brain to be more well and to be more whole. And so that's really exciting to me. I hope that gives you some hope that if you are struggling with anxiety, that, like, it doesn't mean that you're fated to suffer. Of course, you're always going to feel fear and anxiety. Like, you have kids. So, you know, there's always going to be a low level of, like, oh, what if something happens? But what can be even bigger is your ability to be resilient and to be able to say, okay, if this happens, when this happens, what's our plan? What are we going to do? How are we going to address it? And at some point there's some things that you can't fix. And then it's just sort of this surrender comes over you where I can't fix it. I have to just live through this and, you know, and I can get through it, you know? And so it's a mixture of these mindsets. And when I'm looking at anxiety, especially a mom that has anxiety, I look through the physical, the emotional, mental, and the spiritual. So sort of looking, you know, for yourself, if you're anxious, if you're having like a heart palpitation or you're getting stomach aches, or it's just this feeling of worry, concern, what if this happens? The first thing you always want to do is check the physical. So is there something underlying? Sometimes there's thyroid issues. Sometimes there's micronutrient imbalances, deficient in vitamin D, omega-3s, things like that. That if you start taking good supplements, actually, your stress and anxiety gets better because your body begins to function better. And all anxiety is your amygdala is firing and sending stress hormones into your body. That's what makes you suffer when you have anxiety. And so when you can sort of almost like tell your body, like, we're safe, we're okay, we have all the nutrition that we need, we're functioning properly, the amygdala doesn't like go off as easily. So we have to look at caffeine. We have to look at sugar. We have to look at blood sugar. These are the things that are so important on that physical realm. In terms of the mental, emotional, there are tons of exercises that you can do to help to build your brain, you know, mindfulness and meditation being just one of them, you know, taking a more resilient mindset. So when your brain goes to that negativity bias of like, oh, this is going to happen, bad things are going to happen, because that's just how our brain is wired. Like, that's okay. You know, once you're aware of that negativity, you can say, okay, but am I 100% sure this is going to happen? What else is possible? And, you know, even that question can help to kind of reduce the anxiety, you know, practicing exercise, you know, exercise can be a great way to reduce your anxiety in the long term. And then that helps to rewire that amygdala. And what I will say with anxiety is that if there is a fear, if your child has a fear, the worst thing that we can do is to avoid the things that cause that fear. So I know it's hard to put yourself out there and into a scary experience, but every time you do it and you don't die, your amygdala gets stronger. and it learns, oh, this is not a dangerous situation. But the only way that it learns is through that experience. So I get really nervous when I hear parents, you know, keeping their kids away from animals that they're afraid of, or elevators, or, you know, things that really can add more value to a person's life, versus, you know, creating these opportunities for the child to be resilient and brave and courageous, and you're with them, you know, through the scary experience. And over time, you know, the dog doesn't bite them. Obviously make sure it's a safe dog. Do your work ahead of time. Don't just throw them in front of a dog, like a random dog, clearly. But, you know, letting their brain have a new experience, because let's say, you know, you mentioned you had a situation with the dog bite. You know, when the dog bites, that fear, you know, creates a story in the amygdala. And so the next time there's a dog, that fear comes flooding right back. Like, oh my gosh, like I have to keep myself safe. So the only way to really move through that is either one, by immersing yourself in the situation, you know, going into something that's going to create that fight flight response. Or you could, you know, we were talking about EFT, tapping is another nice way is a little bit safer, because you're sort of reliving that trauma in the moment and you're allowing yourself to feel it while tapping, and sometimes repeating, you know, more empowering statements. So those are the two, you know, ways that I recommend people with, like, especially a specific fear.
Awesome. I love that. So many great ideas and tips. So something that you said that really sparked in my head, and it's, you know, I think a concern that a lot of parents have, especially moms, is, you know, you have this child, you have a girl, and we all know as girls, we're going to go through a lot of heartbreak. We're going to go through heartbreak with friends. There are going to be mean children out there. You know, there's going to be boyfriends at some point, and they're going to go through times that are tough and that hurt. And as much as we want to protect them and shelter them and create situations where that's not going to happen, how that can be so damaging, because the reality is they need to go through some of this stuff so that when they're older, they're prepared for even more situations.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, the first question that comes to mind is, you know, to ask our daughters, how are you strong today? You know, how are you brave today? How did you, you know, did you put yourself out there and somebody, you know, didn't want to play with you? Like, that's awesome. Like, you're still here. Like, you're telling me about it. Like, that's so cool. Like, you were so brave. And, you know, really, you know, praising, you know, more for the action and the braveness. Or you could even, you know, turn it another way. You could say, like, how are you kind to someone today? Because I promise you, if your daughter's struggling, someone else's daughter is struggling too. You know, we're never alone. Like, we, the human experience, like, while we think we're all really special, is pretty similar in a lot of ways. And so, you know, anytime we can normalize, like, oh, like, you had a bad day, and you're still here. Like, you're here to tell me about it. Like, let's talk about, remember that time when, you know, we went on that awesome vacation and, you know, you had so much fun. So it's kind of like, you know, you don't want to dismiss them. Like, you don't want to, you know, make them feel bad for sharing their feelings or just go automatically to the positive. You can say, like, well, how did that feel? Like, when you got left out, you know, like, was that sad? Because then it helps them to see, like, okay, you know, I felt bad, so maybe I don't want to do this to somebody else. Because what I have seen with girls especially is that there's this ebb and flow of, like, we're friends today, we're not friends today. This happened yesterday, and so I'm not talking to them today. Oh, now we're best friends. Like, we're, everything's great. So, you know, parents, like, we don't want to get involved, like, right away, unless, of course, we see that there's, like, serious bullying happening, you know, meaning constantly getting left out. It's not having the ebb and flow. There's, you know, for at least, you know, a week, let's say, there's this constant, you know, theme of isolation or loneliness. Like, that clearly is a time for us to jump in and to become mama bears and, like, advocate for our kid. Because I think, you know, and it also, you know, I invite you as moms to look at your friends. Are you clicky? You know, are you only spending time with certain groups of moms and their daughters so that if those girls at school aren't part of your group, you know, they're ultimately going to be left out because they're having all these memories created outside of school. So when they come together again, it's like they feel more connected. You know, it's sort of like the idea of that's how gangs started. people sort of feeling isolated and being stronger in numbers. And so, you know, we want to have, you know, our girls to acknowledge that, you know, everybody has bad days. I'm strong. Making sure they know that they're lovable for who they are, not for what they do. That they're valued. They're valued on this planet. They are an important piece of the puzzle of humanity, and we need them here because they have gifts that show up just by being here. And so, you know, looking at the sacredness of every child, and you know, really seeing that in them. You know, just can build them up. You know, we want to give them, they're called risk or protective factors. So we want to build up their protective factors. So when it happens, and it being the bullying, the bad grade, getting yelled at, getting in trouble, whatever number of things that are going to happen in our life journey that we are important. And I promise you that if you have the right mindset, it can make you stronger and it can really help your life in a way that you never imagined. So it's not avoiding them. Again, you know, it's never to avoid them. It's to build the resiliency through them.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. This was such a wonderful conversation and it was a pleasure having you. To find out more about Jennifer, you can find her at themindfulfamily.com. To hear the rest of this interview as we further explore this topic and we look at tips for dealing with tantrums and how to teach a child to recognize their emotions and stop their own tantrums before they even happen, how to connect with moody teens, teaching girls how to pick good friends, and to navigate the friend drama and more, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com and become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.